something off topic, I'll be glad to direct it to James or Brian and let them handle the questions that I don't have answers to, which could be many. But yeah, is there something pressing on your heart or that you need some clarification or understanding on? I covered a lot of ground in a short period of time, and so, but really trusted the Lord for that and still to work in it. But you know, there may be some questions that you have, and I'd love to take a stab at them. Yeah, Dan. In one sense, yes and yes. It's normal somewhat because of, I would say because of your age and the culture of our age category, okay? The culture is changing. We are not becoming a post-Christian culture, we already are, okay? And so with younger people, it should be more of a question and an issue. And for many of them, they won't know why somebody's different, because they haven't heard of Jesus other than in the wrong context, okay? And so because of, you know, you and I, we grew up in a Judeo-Christian ethic and worldview that has changed. And so there's a basic understanding of some of that with our peers, even though many of them are unbelievers. And so oftentimes it is normal not to be asked. Where it will be asked oftentimes is not just in your general faithfulness or kindness like I described with Byron, who was a foreigner in a strange culture, so he stood out. We don't stand out in our culture, okay? So it is in the crisis. It is in the trial. Jim Spoda, one of my lifelong friends who's been a missionary in Italy. Jim was a second-generation Italian Catholic. His wife, second-generation Italian Catholic, and, you know, they were just the stereotype, I mean, their life. And their son Jonathan was born with Down syndrome. And their life was devastated. And when that happened, when something like that happens, you begin noticing others with the same. They started noticing some other families with Down syndrome children. And some of that is the places you go for medical care, you meet people like that. And there was one family that had that same crisis that was responding differently with a peace and with a joy that stood out in that crisis. And so Lori sought the woman out to find out, how is it that you guys are handling this? We're devastated. Okay, so in the normalcy of life with a Judeo-Christian background, oftentimes the difference stands out in crisis, okay? And some of that for you, for me, when we get to this age where parents or aunts and uncles or other peers begin to die because of the life age span, how we respond in those situations can begin to show the reality of that difference in our life, where there might be some question for it, okay? So that's the best way I think I can answer that right now. when you're in different cultures and different situations, it'll stand out a little bit more. And that can be a cultural change in the workplace or something like that too. Is it good? Yeah, absolutely. But I would, and I'm not sure the way you were saying it, if you've had those situations where you have shared the gospel, let me say this, you were successful. Success is not based on whether or not someone gets saved. That's the joy, okay? God does not expect us to save anybody. It's not dependent upon our craftiness or our ability. It's dependent on faithfully speaking the gospel and the gospel story, okay? And when we give the gospel, we have done, when the Spirit of God said, you will be witnesses, it was, you will give a testimony of the gospel to others. That's what we're called to do. Some will believe, some will not. Those that you speak to who may be hearing it for the first time, oftentimes they're not likely to respond at that point. It may be after several people. But you bear the fruit of that someday because you were the first. I have found that many people where I share the gospel with them, and it's the first time I do that and they get saved, as I talk with them, there are others in their life along the way that share the gospel. And God, they were just ready at their point of life, and I happen to be the one that God used. So again, it's not, yeah, it's good. One of the other things that I encourage the older men here to do, if you haven't done it, is write out your testimony and how you got saved and how God has impacted your life and key events as a piece of legacy to give to your children and your grandchildren and other family members. Okay? You know, birthday is a good time to do it, where it's your birthday is coming up, or Christmas, or something like, where you give it to them as a gift. And it's like, hey, you know what? As we get older, we start thinking more about where we came from and who our relatives are. And sometimes we wish we knew more about them. And so I've prepared this as a gift for you, so you know about me and a little bit about my family and where we fit into this broader family. And it's a foundation where the gospel is shared. You don't know which great-great-grandchild down the line who's born well after you're off of this earth will be doing some genealogical work or come across that piece in their parents' chest of keepsakes, and they'll read that, and it may be the first time they hear the gospel and they get saved because of that. It's the gospel in written form. So think about some ways to do that kind of thing too that are non-confrontive but gentle and respectful of the family and the family name, and sharing what an important value is in your life of the treasure of Christ. Okay? So yes, don't go in like a bull in a china shop, like a brand new believer often does. Go with wisdom, go with grace, go with gentleness. The power is in the gospel, not in us. Okay? And be prepared for rejection if it comes. Be thankful when they're at least kind and say, hey, you know what? I know that's important to you. Thank you for sharing that with me. And they dismiss it. You know, that's a good move sometimes. So good. Other questions? Yes. Yeah, see, that's important to have the scriptures to redirect our mind to the truth. But it's also where I really began in my life. When I talked earlier last night or this morning about openness and transparency, and when someone makes an accusation or says something about where they observe, and it's like, yeah, you're right, you know, and it's far worse than you. That really started in my life as I was dealing with the accusations in my mind of Satan. To where, again, I've come to a place that when I have an accusation in my mind that's from Satan, especially if it's specific or fairly specific and I know it's true, it's like, yeah, Satan, that's true. But Jesus' blood has covered that. So be gone with you. That thought's removed from the mind. Even if I don't have a verse to deal with it, that very fact that the blood of Christ has dealt with that in my life and I've confessed it to him, if it's coming from an attack of the Satan or one of his emissaries, I can deal with it with Christ and his blood and be free from it and not allow that to weigh me down. But then certain verses that apply to the specifics are always helpful to carry it through. Because Satan doesn't always give up with that, even though you know, Jesus, three times. Okay, so I don't expect one time that I say something that it's over with. But yeah, renewing your mind with the Word of God helps us to remember what we need to believe in those circumstances. What else? Your question is a good question, I think. You know, you always hear people, the only bad question is the one that's not asked. Well, I've heard some pretty bad questions through the years. I've asked a few myself, too, and usually the professor let me know when I ask that question. But I'm not going to shoot you down, I think, if you ask. No. Yeah, please. No, I understand what you're driving at. You don't want to be drawn into their sin. Separation really in some of those kinds of things is a personal issue. There's some things that you choose not to because it can be a temptation and draw you the wrong way. There's other things that are not. There was a time when I was growing up where there was this idea that... And it came from the verse that talks about avoiding evil or avoiding the appearance of evil that has sometimes been misused. It was a great bat or lever to manipulate people when it's used that way. It should be used in its context. There's times where, because I remember early in ministry, I was in southern Ohio, and a wife called me, and her husband was drunk again and at the bar, and she was concerned about how he'd get home. It was an icy night. And I said, I'll go get him. So I carefully got dressed, went down, went into the bar. I'm the pastor of the Baptist church in town, going into the bar. You know, I knew I'd be seen. I knew there'd be stuff that came from it. But I was there for another reason, okay? And that's a worthy thing. And it's a guy I was sharing the gospel with and trusting would come to faith. And I wanted him to know I cared enough to do that. In that situation. And you know, I could have easily gone, well, I got to stay separate from the appearance of evil. And so, no, I can't help you. You know, so you got to use wisdom when it comes to the issue of separation. But the thing that we have to remember is that, you know what? One of the greatest accusations thrown at Jesus is that he spent too much time with sinners. I don't mind identifying with Jesus in that way. Because I find that for a lot of us as believers, we don't spend enough time with sinners. Okay? So, but again, you've got to do it for genuine reasons. That sinner or that group of sinners can't become my project, and I'm only there to lead them to Christ. If I'm not there to get to know them, their lives, their families, their difficulties and struggles, which really is the foundation of knowledge to really drive home the gospel to them, then they're just a project, and they know it. So you do have to spend time. You got to love on people. You got to help them. You got to go through those kinds of things. And that may not sit well with other people. And if it's having an effect on your life, that's where you got to have some others around you say, hey, we see, we value what you're doing. We encourage it, but we see a drift that's happening with you. Be careful with that. Okay? So again, don't isolate yourself even in doing those things. But man, how else are they going to hear? Who's going to care enough to go and sit with them and help them? Okay? I didn't do it when I was here, but, you know, nowadays I'll go sit in a bar with a guy, drink a glass of water. Everybody thinks it's vodka, but I don't care, you know, because that's where he is. And he's not drunk. You know, there's a couple of business guys. I've met them in those situations because they want to talk. I'll do that. And it's okay. It may not be okay for everybody. There's someone that has problems with alcoholism in their past or struggling with that. No, don't go there. Don't put yourself in that place of temptation. Meet somewhere else. So you just got to use wisdom in those things. But yeah, pursue it. Share the gospel. But it's getting to know people's lives. The key, here's one of the things that's really important about sharing the gospel, okay? And again, through the 60s and 70s, where formulas and tools became really important in it. So like the Romans Road and some of these pieces, they're good tools, okay? But in the changing of our culture that doesn't know the Bible, we need to know the Bible and recognize that the gospel is not just the Romans Road, okay? It's not just jumping to Jesus and the cross, because a lot of people don't even know the context of who Jesus or why he had to come. So when you understand the redemptive story from Genesis all the way up to the cross and beyond, you can be talking with anybody, and no matter what they bring up in their life, there's something in the Old Testament where that struggle is part of the story of God. So I'm just going to take them right there and go, oh, you struggle with bipolar. Did you know the Bible describes bipolar? Not specifically. But there was this young man who became king. His name was David. And if you look at his life and you read the Psalms, you see a guy whose heart was after God, who was up and down and up and down and up and down and up and down. If he were alive today, they would have diagnosed him with bipolar and dealt with it. So when I meet with someone, it's like, you know, the Bible talks about people like that. Man, some important people. Really? Yeah. So I'll take them and I'll read some of the passages that David wrote. And it's like, that's exactly how I feel. Well, let me tell you what difference was made in David's life to help him with that. And I talk about the king who would sit on his throne, the promise of that, his love of the Lord. And I take them from there in the Psalms quickly through the Old Testament to the cross and Jesus as the one that David was looking for, okay? And then I can get to why Jesus came. So it's not this, the hardest thing about witnessing when you focus just on the events of Christ and the gospel, as important as that is, and that's the core of the gospel, is how do you start that conversation? That's the awkward part for most people. You meet someone, you're talking with them about the weather or sports or work or whatever it is, and it's like, so often we just kind of jump there. And for them, it's like, wow, where'd that come from, right? Or you never get there because you don't know how to get there. How do I go from where we are in the conversation to there? So again, reading the scriptures through and understanding the storyline and being able to drop in. When I'm talking to someone who's a Muslim, man, they love Abraham and Ishmael. So I'll go back to Genesis and the God who created and lead them up to Abraham in the scriptures and the promises made to Abraham and how the promise is fulfilled in Jesus. And when I get to Jesus, I share the gospel with them because Jesus is part of the Quran. There's more about Jesus than there is Muhammad in the Quran. And so knowing how to place the gospel in the context of life within the context of the scripture is a natural way to talk with someone and bring them to the cross, okay? So learn to do some of that because that takes away some of the awkwardness with family members or other friends who just don't know Christ, but you have a concern for them in those situations. So yeah, you can meet with someone and talk about life. And as the Spirit prompts and it's the right opportunity, begin to go into that conversation. And here's what will often happen. Some disruption comes. Fire alarm goes off in the building. Somebody comes up and, oh, hey, I haven't seen you in so long. At that point, I go, okay, it's time to step back. That disruption is a tool of Satan to keep the gospel from coming forth. You know, so I'll step back, and if I can a little bit later, I'll go back to it in the conversation. But if not, hey, next time I want to kind of follow up with you with what we were talking about there. And I'll wait. But that's loving and working with people and not just the project, okay? If you make them a project, they will know it. Because you know what happens when it's a project and then they do reject your Jesus? You stop calling them. You stop going and see them. And then they really know that's all you wanted. Just remember, God hasn't given up on him, so we shouldn't give up on him either. Face the rejection. Continue to love him. Continue to spend time with him. Go fishing with him. Take him hunting. Go ball game. Whatever they enjoy, do it with him. Keep that. When they reject Jesus, which in essence is rejecting what's important in your life, don't reject them. If they're in a relationship level, neighbor, friend, extended family member, don't cut them off. Keep it going, because you don't know what God's going to bring into their life or your life that'll open it back up later. And God can overcome the rejections of men. So, what else? Yes. Yeah, yeah, let me, a lack of love is selfishness, okay? If I can be blunt, a lack of love is selfishness. I define love this way. Love is giving. Selfishness is taking, okay? So it's not a feeling, it's not a romance, it's not a bromance, it's not that stuff. That's a form of love in the culture. Love simply means I care enough to hang in there with you. Give of myself, give of my time. Even if some stuff I don't like doing, I'll still do some of that. I'll make a fool of myself because I'm not good at it. That's okay, because the relationship is more important. So it's about, love is really about a commitment and giving. So you got to get yourself there. So that starts on your knees before God. Okay, God, give me a commitment to this person, a care for this person, a genuine love for this person, where I'm willing to give of my time and to respond kindly through their annoyances and their whatever it may be, okay? So it's not about creating a feeling where it's like, oh, because it's not about how happy I am in the situation. It's about, oftentimes it's the person who is kind of on the outs, that doesn't have a lot of friends, who is a little bit awkward socially, those kinds of things. That's who you can have an impact with, but those are the people we tend not to want to. It's like, oh, they're going to be high maintenance. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, just stop and look at your own life in relationship to Christ. You're high maintenance too. Okay, and high maintenance people need someone who will stick with them through those things. So it starts on your knees. So every time you're going to go see them or you see them walking towards you, it's, Lord, give me the ability to give of myself in this situation. And that giving of itself will grow to a point that gives you the gospel opportunities where they're ready to listen, and they will listen, because you may be one of the few people who really have given the time or given the attention of your life for them. So in one sense, love is as simple as that. Okay, how do I give to this person? How do I serve? Larry. See, that's what I was talking about at the very beginning last night, okay? The letters of commendation, the titles, elder, pastor, the degrees, the positions, all that stuff, that's not important when it comes to the gospel. And we can let that stuff get in the way. I typically don't tell people that I'm a pastor. You know, you get on the airplane and you get a talkative person, and they're always like, so what do you do? You know what my response to that is? So tell me, what do you think I do? And they'll start naming some things, and it's usually not pastor. You know, then I'll go, well, you know what? I'm a pastor. Really? Wow. I said, does that surprise you? Yeah, it does. I said, it surprises me too. And that's then the basis to say why it surprises me. So I can talk a little bit about Christ in that. So, you know, so again, I typically don't introduce myself as a pastor, because when you're a pastor and you know, oh yeah, the pastor's here, you know, walls go up, barriers. I don't want to create those. So it's, you know, a funny story at the new office at Bible Basics International. I'm the new president there. There's a volunteer who's been coming in there for years, and she does the newsletters, folds, stamps, all that stuff. And she came in one morning. I think it was my first week there, and I kind of walked in and just, hi, I'm Steve. Who are you, Case? We sat and we talked for probably about 15, 20 minutes, and I said, man, thanks for being here. It's nice to meet you. And I got up and I left. A little bit later, some guy came in here. Who was that? Well, what do you mean? It was probably, was it Steve? Yeah. Well, yeah, that's our new president. That was the president? You know, it's like, hey, I'm the president of a little tiny mission that has five people in the office. It's no big deal, okay? It's just organizationally a title. But that's not, my identity isn't in that. That's not who I am. And so again, in the context that you're in, it's important not to let those titles, even as pastors and elders when you're shepherding your people, there's times that a title has something to do with authority, okay? There's times you have to use the title where someone's not responding or being rebellious, okay? But really, authority or leadership and authority is influence. So use your influence in relationship first, and the influence of the Word of God. And if they're not responding and you have to use the title, then you do that. Because, and so, but that applies to all of us. You guys who don't have those positions in the church, don't use your rank, your whatever it is. Man, just be the person. Be the instrument. Be the tool that God will use so you don't create those barriers. Because it's so easy for us to do that because we make it about us. And good example. David. David, you got to deal with your pride problem, the fact that you even brought that question up. No, no. You know what? That's the battle. That's the battle. You know, I mean, as you get older, you can handle that better. You know, and again, some of it's just the work of Christ in your life.